Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, we're going to talk about near-death experiences, life after heaven, how my time in heaven can transform your life on earth. Stephen Musick joins us. An incredible story. He's got an incredible background as well. So we'll get right into this when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stephen Musick with us. He's a founder, CEO of Destiny Capital. That's a financial planning and investment firm, holder of three master's degrees in management, financial services, international economics. Stephen teaches at the University of Denver Daniels College of Business. Now, this is what he wants to do, is spend the rest of his life helping people who have a firsthand relationship with God and to show them how to experience the kingdom of heaven in the here and now. Stephen and his wife, Elaine, have three sons. He was also in the Navy. I knew there was something about you I like, Stephen. I spent 9 years in the Navy, so welcome to the show.
Okay, we're both Navy sailors.
Yes, well, I never hit the ship. I was a public information officer, so I did Pentagon duty.
Mm.
So while you floated along, I was a landlubber.
Yeah.
So be it.
Well, but you know, I was, but part of my story is I was 1 year in college, and like a lot of collegians, I ran out of money right on schedule. And back in that day, if you were no longer in college, you got a notice that said, you're eligible for the lottery.
Uh-huh.
And not a lottery like you win a lot of money. You're eligible for the draft lottery. And emblazoned in the middle of that page was the number 16. And it's kind of like, oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm going to be drafted.
I was number 20.
Oh, yeah, okay. Lottery. Kindred spirits.
Yep. I mean, we were really, really close. And, well, I'll tell you one day if we ever meet just what all that was all about, but it was incredible times in this country. And
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know. We may go back to that one day. Who knows, huh?
Yeah.
Santa. Anyways, tell me a little bit about you. I mean, how did you go from being in investments, where you still are, into writing a book about God and heaven and that? How did that transform for you?
It was just as dramatic and surreal as you can imagine.
I bet.
I was sitting in a very large intersection real close to our home, and I'm in my little blue Subaru station wagon, and up on my left pulls up a white moving van, and on my right a white panel truck, and so I'm sitting in a canyon of white waiting for the light to change, and the light turns green, and neither truck moved. And I'm thinking, what are they, distracted driving? Are they texting or something?
Yeah.
And I accelerated into the intersection just in time to get hit by a green and white trash truck traveling at a terrific rate of speed, running the red light.
That's why they didn't move. They saw it coming.
They saw it coming. Oh. And I woke up, and I'd been dreaming. And it was one of those dreams where you wake up and you're hyperventilating because it was so real.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying this event was a dream?
It was a dream.
Oh.
And then 5 weeks later, I'm sitting at that very same intersection.
Here it goes.
And a white moving van pulls up on my left, and a white panel truck pulls up on my right. And I'm nauseous, and I've got goosebumps, and I'm thinking, deja vu all over again. And the light turns green, only this time I go, gee, I've seen this movie, it didn't end well. And sure enough, 4 seconds later, a green and white trash truck rockets.
Isn't that something? That is a miracle.
And I hear two things. The first one is, I could bring you back to heaven anytime. And the second statement was, I want you to get serious about telling your story. And so that was 2011. And part of getting serious about telling my story is I'm now doing teaching and consulting and ministry and that kind of thing. We wrote a book. So
good
that's
for you.
How I got into the life after heaven business and beginning to tell my story.
And you still have the investment firm going, Destiny
Oh, yeah.
Capital? Okay.
Yeah, it's my day job, you know. It's one of those,
Yeah.
when people look at you, they go, well, don't give up your day job, you know.
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
I've been doing that for 41 years, and I love it. And so this is sort of, I'm 61 years old, and this is they're both a labor of love.
Are you bullish on the economy, by the way? Might as well ask you while I got you on this.
You know, there are elements going on in the marketplace in the economy today that I haven't really experienced since the turn of the century, and altogether, that's pretty exciting stuff. But at the same time, I'm a little disturbed at some of what I'm reading, so I'm not fully drinking all of the Kool-Aid yet. So I'm encouraged at this point in time. I wouldn't say I'm over the top excited.
All right. So now let's talk about the work, the life after heaven. When you were growing up, were you particularly, Stephen, religious or spiritual?
My family, I was raised in a Christian home. My family, we were Orthodox Episcopalians.
Okay.
So think about Roman Catholic light, you know. And so I was very well steeped in Christian tradition. You know, went to catechism and, you know, was an acolyte and an altar boy and had a working understanding and a knowledge of the book and the rules, and I knew all of that.
And were you a believer?
Yes. I was a believer from the standpoint of I really understood, and I'd really sort of, I bought into the idea that there was a God and he had a son, Jesus, and, you know, I understood all of that piece. What I didn't have growing up was the idea of the relationship offered in the world of faith and the world of spirit. So I guess I had a really good foundation, but I didn't really have a relationship.
And in this knowledge of God and your belief system, did you get into, you know, angels and all that too?
You know, as part of Orthodoxy, we didn't spend a lot of time with that. You know, it was very, you know, Orthodoxy is very, very tradition oriented. And so, you know, that part of my Christian history and experience was kind of, nope, not so much.
Your experience in the Navy had somewhat to do with this thought pattern about the life after death as well. Something happened to you. You were given a vaccine. What happened there?
Yeah. The United States government in 1975 panicked, I think, over what they thought was going to be a pandemic of the swine flu.
Oh, yeah.
And so they rushed to create a vaccine, and part of the test bed for the vaccine, they used military personnel in North Chicago. And, you know, you were in the Navy. You don't have any choices there.
Do you have to do it?
They're going to inoculate you.
Yep.
They line you up and you get shot. And I had an allergic reaction to the swine flu vaccine. And I'm laying in the emergency department of the regional hospital at Great Lakes. And I've got an IV in my arm, and a nurse strides in, and she's tapping her fingernail on the syringe to get all the bubbles out. And she looks right at me and she says, well, this will fix you right up. And I didn't know that I was allergic to the antidote as well.
Oh, my gosh.
And they just introduced a lethal dose of it directly into my system.
Oh, a double whammy to you.
Oh, yeah. And so when she pushed the plunger into my IV, it took all of 3 seconds for me to swoon, and I'm history. I'm gone.
Are you technically dead at that point?
Yeah, I believe I was. You know, I think had I not been in an emergency department of a major regional hospital, you know, if I'd have been in a dispensary or, you know, been in the in some kind of other less qualified medical facility, I don't think I'd be here.
So they were able to at least bring you back, or were you sent back?
I was really set back. I woke up 5 weeks later in intensive care isolation.
5 weeks?
Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah. You were in a coma?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was one of those things as a military person, you don't have access to your medical records.
No.
But I had access. They, on my discharge, they gave me my, you know, my personnel file.
Your jacket, as we called it.
My jacket. And when you look at my personnel records, you get a real strong sense that they didn't think I was going to wake up.
5 weeks. Who would?
Yeah, really.
Did you have family then?
I did. I didn't personally have family, but I have a mom and dad and a, you know, a brother.
But, but
it's funny now, but they sent my parents at my last address a little 3x5 card, and the 3x5 card had three boxes that you checked. Number one was killed in action. Number two was missing in action. And number three was a box that you could check with a blank. And they checked the third blank, and they said has been transferred to Great Lakes Regional Hospital, and that was it. That was the only thing.
That's how they got notified?
That's the only thing that they sent to my family.
Oh, my gosh. Normally, they would have at least sent some military folks to your house.
Yeah, that it was a mess. I mean, it was when they gave the swine flu to the military personnel, it's the first time since World War II that Great Lakes Hospital was full to a divert status.
Oh.
I mean, it was a dramatic triage kind of a thing.
So the shot was the one that walloped you, but was it the antidote that really almost killed you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And I think today they would never do that. I mean, today they would give you something, you know, they'd do a scratch disease. They would do something other than introduce, you know, a quote unquote antidote directly into your system. They would test you with a little bit before they gave you a
burst of it. Yeah, no, you're right. Now, did this happen, the vaccination disaster, before or after the dream of the garbage truck going through the intersection?
Oh, this is way before.
Way before. So you've been having
The garbage truck was 2011.
Okay.
And the near-death experience in the hospital was 1976.
So you're in a coma for 5 weeks.
Yep.
You've had this near-death experience. For all practicality, you could have been dead.
Yep.
What's happening? What do you recollect, Stephen?
Well, from the time that she pushed the plunger down, I was transported to a place that I interpreted as heaven. And it seemed like an afternoon that I visited heaven, had a long conversation with the Son of God, Jesus, and it reoriented my life. You know, part of being a little kid in my household, we were Orthodox Episcopalians, we were Christians, but my experience growing up was one of violence and vacancy. My brother was a national champion, had, you know, gold medals, and he was a all-star athlete and that kind of thing.
In what field was he in?
Track and field.
Track and field, okay.
Yeah, he was the junior Olympic champion at age 17 nationally. And that gives you a little bit of an idea. He was really, really gifted as an athlete. And so, you know, I grew up as Charlie Music's little brother, you know. And I, as a result of that, I just didn't have any kind of identity at all. And some of the violence in our household, my brother was bipolar, undiagnosed bipolar.
They didn't know what that was then.
They didn't. And You know, and part of writing the book is having really good dialogue with my brother. And he was like, you know, I was really horrible to you when we were growing up.
See, he knows it now, right?
Oh, yeah. He's like, I am so sorry for how awful I was. And there was a great opportunity for us to reconnect as brothers and be able to say, hey, you know, it's okay. You didn't know, and we didn't either, and they didn't hardly know what bipolar was back in the, you know, the 1960s. So
do you think this all contributed to this experience that you had?
I think so. I mean, for me, the ability to have a conversation with Jesus and understand that, you know, he was there when I was getting the tar beat out of me every afternoon, and that he was there when all of the stuff happened growing up.
Was he there when you died in that hospital room?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember him in your dream state?
Yeah, I do.
I'll say it's a dream. It could be an actual experience.
Yeah. You know, sometimes dreams are the most real we get.
Do you recollect what heaven was like?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
The visual part of heaven is, we live in the here and now like 1950s television. It's grainy, black and white, mm-hmm. with rabbit ears on the top of the set box. And we think that's just normal. We just think that's the way it is. And heaven on the other side is like HD on steroids. It's just vibrant.
But tell me it's not all clouds and harps.
It's not all clouds.
All right.
For me, my experience in heaven was, it's all outdoors. It's agrarian. You know, big trees, hills, mountains, you know, wheat fields on the right and forests on the left. And it's a wonderful place.
Was it blissful?
Yes. Yeah, emotionally, heaven is like being inside pure joy.
Were there other beings or entities there with you?
The only other person that was in heaven, in my experience, was Jesus. That was
so
it.
So you felt him, saw him?
Yeah. Yeah, and had personal conversation just like I'm talking to you.
And so past loved ones didn't come and visit you or try to comfort you or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
I would have loved to have had a sit-down fireside chat with my grandfather.
Was there any point, Stephen, that when you were in this heavenly state, you didn't want to come back?
Oh, no. And part of it was, I knew I was in heaven, and I thought I was dead. And
did you know who you were at that point?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm liking it. I'm thinking, man, I'm 20 years old. My life ended, and this is good. I'm liking this.
All right, hold on. We're going to talk more about this story, an incredible story. Stephen Music with us on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, you are with our guest, Stephen Music, as we talk about his work. Of course, he died, was in a coma for 5 weeks. Life After Heaven is the name of his book, and we'll be back and talk with him. We'll take phone calls and maybe your stories next hour as well on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stephen Music with us. Stephen, so let's get back into this heavenly realm that you were in for 5 weeks. Now, at any point, did you sense evil, the devil, hell, anything like that?
No, not at all.
Good.
And rather, it's just the opposite of that. I mean, part of the beauty, part of the wonder of being in heaven is being inside pure joy. And, you know, on this side, happiness is sort of a tidal flow. You're happy and then you're sad. And there's a season to that and a flow to that. in heaven, you're inside pure joy, and it's omnipresent. It comes for you. And one of the disillusioning pieces to that, which is pretty consistent with everybody that's had a near-death experience, is you come back on this side and you're sort of delusional. And part of that is because where you were was so wonderful that you come back to the land of bland.
Mm-hmm. Would you have felt that way if it were just like a two-minute near-death experience as opposed to 5 weeks?
Yes.
Same way.
And the reason for that is that time is only a construct on this side.
Right.
There is no sense of time. There's no sense of a passage of time. I mean, my sense of being in heaven was I was there for an afternoon. And the most painful words I've ever heard in my entire lifetime from that day to this were the words of Jesus to me with his arm over my shoulder that said, in a very tender way, and you can't stay. And when he said, you can't stay, I wake up in intensive care isolation and back in the hospital. And I'm thinking, oh, great.
Now, at what point did you remember all of this? I mean, right away? Or
right
you,
away.
You weren't just groggy going, oh, my God, where am I?
No.
Okay.
No, and, you know, one of the reasons people ask me all the time, it's like, well, how do you know that this was really heaven and not just a, you know,
not just a dream, a hallucination.
Yeah, not just a dream and a narcotic-induced kind of a thing. And my conclusion to that is that happened 41 years ago, and it's still as tangible and fresh to me as though it happened yesterday.
How has it changed your life, Stephen?
Oh, you know, frankly, I came home from the military as a disabled veteran, and I was disabled. Clearly disabled for 10 years. And
because of the vaccination?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, I had 60% lung damage in both lungs.
Oh, my God.
And so they discharged me. They gave me the GI Bill, which is kind of what I wanted when I went in. And they gave me a disability. So I get a check every month to this day.
It's not a lot. We know that.
Yeah, I can tell you exactly what a corporal in the United States Army makes. You know?
Yep.
I'm in this place for 10 years of trying to figure out there's sovereignty of God over everything that happens, even the bad stuff. And I'm spending 10 years of my life figuring out I wasn't able to stay in heaven, so what in the world am I doing here?
Well, when you came out of this coma and you realized, gosh, I'm not in heaven anymore,
yeah,
were you disappointed?
Yes. Disillusioned, disappointed. Because when I was in heaven, I figured I was staying. I figured this is like the, you know, the preamble. This is the front porch of heaven. And that at some point in time that I would get introduced to the rest of heaven, and I'd get to stay here forever. That was my assumption going in. And when I woke up in intensive care isolation, it was very disillusioning. It's like, oh, no. And I woke up in a worse condition than when I passed out in the emergency department.
How long after you woke up, after 5 weeks, did it take you to get acclimated again?
About a week.
Okay. I mean, and meanwhile, they were IVing you nutrients and things like that, right?
Yeah. Part of it is when I was in boot camp, I qualified to go to SEALs. So, you know, they take a very small percentage of people at recruit training.
It's the cream of the crop, that's for sure.
And so I qualified for SEALs. I was 5'11". I was 195 pounds. And I was one of those guys that was just chiseled as a youngster. And I woke up in intensive care isolation at 126 pounds.
Oh, my God.
And I was bruised, literally bruised from head to toe.
When they told you you were out, almost dead, for 5 weeks, Could you relate to that?
No. A, I didn't know exactly where I was. And B, when they said 5 weeks, I thought, 5 weeks? Are you kidding? 5 weeks?
That's over a month.
There was a Navy nurse at the foot of my bed charting. And she got up, leaned over me, and she said, "Welcome back. We thought we lost you back there."
Mm.
And I had no idea what back there was.
When did you finally get out of the hospital?
They finally discharged me from the hospital in August.
I mean, so how long were you there? Including the 5 weeks.
I checked into the hospital on April 9th of 1976. And they discharged me from the hospital in August.
So 4 months.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yep.
4 months in the hospital.
Yeah.
And wheelchaired you out. That's procedure in a hospital. But did you get out of the wheelchair when you got out of there?
Mm-hmm.
Were you able to walk and stuff like that?
It took me a good 3-4 weeks. For all the clotted blood in my subcutaneous systems to clear. I mean, it just takes a long time to get well. And, you know, I literally had to learn how to walk again.
And so,
you know, I spent 3 weeks moving from intensive care isolation out onto the wards. And then gradually I got a chance to do what I called laps. And, you know, laps on the ward trying to learn, you know, trying to get acclimated into a pretty fractured body.
At what point, Stephen, did you start telling people about this after-death experience?
I didn't tell anyone, including my wife, for a period of 10 years. And part of the reason for that was...
You mean 10 years after the episode?
Yeah.
You didn't say anything. Wow.
I didn't say anything. So
you're 30-ish when you're starting to talk about it, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. And with two rather incredible exceptions, and maybe we'll get into that, but I'm still trying to integrate what just happened to me. And, you know, if you're going to talk about an experience, people are going to ask you questions that, frankly, I didn't have the answer to.
You didn't have the answer, or you didn't want to answer it?
Well, I didn't have the answer. I mean, part of the question is going to be, well, how come you didn't get to stay in heaven? And
it wasn't your time, I would guess.
The answer, I didn't have the answer to that. And so I'm still trying to integrate my experience. But at the core of me, I'm an introvert and I'm an academic. You know, I love school.
Yeah.
And so I spent 10 years digging into the textbook of life called the Bible and trying to understand and integrate the experience that I had with what I have to deal with here in the here and now, and continually answering the question of what in the world am I still doing here?
With this experience, after you came back, you're in your 30s now.
Mm-hmm.
How did you start telling? Well, let me ask you this. Let's go back a little bit. You talked about two exceptions where you talked about it. What were they?
One was I had an experience where I'm talking with a client, and he'd just come out of a period of unemployment, and he was, you know, looking for a job. He got laid off by technology in his old job,
mm-hmm.
and he took a job working at a Walmart store as a greeter.
Just because he needed a job.
He needed a job. And when we met for a clandestine breakfast to talk about what it's like to be a greeter at Walmart, he was talking about, he said, God gave me that job. He said, it's like heaven at work. Those are his exact words. And when he said heaven at work, I got misty, I got weepy, and a bubble of the kingdom of heaven here on earth showed up. And And he's sort of surprised that his financial advisor is having an emotional experience. And then I told him my story. I said, here's what happened to me. And he's all grins on the other side of the table. And we built a relationship out of that where we talked about finding the kingdom of heaven at work, his stories, my stories. It was a wonderful relationship. It was a God-ordained kind of relationship. That was one. And the other one was, as a financial advisor, we're occasionally listed in legal documents. And my client had had a stroke and was in 7 days in the hospital. And under Colorado law, they pull the plug after 7 days if you allow them to.
If the family does, yeah.
So they invited me to the, you know, to the emergency room. She's on life support. She's on a ventilator. And the priest is there to you know, administer last rites. And so they pulled the breathing tube out of her and took her off of life support. And Alice woke up. And
another miracle.
Another one of those bubbles of the kingdom of heaven showed up here and now. And the doctor stepped back and uttered some profanity. And the priest was very kind. He touched the doctor. He said, hang on to those words, Doc. He said, you're on holy ground right now. That was a tender moment. Well, a couple of weeks later, Alice called the office and she said, I'd like you to come. I need to talk to you. And so, you know, of course,
sure.
We went to her house. We went out to the greenhouse out back and sat down, and she put her gloves in her lap and she leaned forward, looked at me, and she said, tell me about your time in heaven.
She had the same experience.
Exactly. She had a very same experience.
Yeah.
And we compared notes, and it was one of those, you know, she and the guy with the Walmart, they're the only people that I talked to in the first 10 years.
Are you afraid of dying now?
Not at all.
No.
Oh, shoot. I'd go back in a heartbeat.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I always would say, I'm not in a rush, but I'm ready when the time comes. You would go back now if you had to.
Yes, in a heartbeat.
You wouldn't miss your family and your wife or?
I would. And I'd like to think that they would miss me, but the tangibility of heaven is worth it. It's all you want. It's really all you want.
When you had this horrible lung issue, horrible.
Yeah.
Your doctor said you're going to have this for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
What happened? It's cleaned up now.
Yeah.
What happened?
At that time, 1986, we were part of a Vineyard Christian Fellowship here, which is a very charismatic expression of Christianity. And on a Thursday night, I went to one of those Thursday night kind of healing services, and they literally called me out of the crowd, named my condition, named the history, and said, you need to come forward and we're going to lay hands on you. And I did that. I stepped forward. I didn't even get all the way to the front of the church. Randy Phillips, the associate pastor there, they laid hands on me and I was out. I mean, they call that slain in the spirit, you know. I was out. And I was sick when they laid hands on me. And for the first time in a decade, I woke up and had a full inspiration of air. My lungs were totally restored. I was out about 20 minutes.
Finally realizing what it's like to breathe again.
Oh, I'm 61 years old today, and every breath I take is a miracle. Every time that I'm in a place where I can, you know, run, I'm a tennis player now, and I can run on the tennis court, I get weepy. Every time I go to high altitude, and
which is where you are, you're in Denver.
Yeah, well, high altitude for me is like 8,000, 9,000 feet. wading, you know, knee deep in a trout stream. Every time I get to do that, I get weepy, because that's just a pure gift. It's a pure gift. And part of the healing experience is I went back to heaven. I went back to the exact same spot that I was in a decade earlier. Only this time the conversation with Jesus was, things will be different now. And I didn't really understand the different piece until I woke up and it's like, oh my gosh, I can breathe. And I could play with my kids and.
What would you say, Stephen, was the significance of this entire episode that you went through? Now that you're back, what would you say you learned about all of this?
That here is very temporary, and heaven is eternal and forever, and that one of the things that's amazing to me after all these years is that the kingdom of heaven is not just some far off place we go to after we're dead. The kingdom of heaven can also be experienced in the here and now. And one bubble at a time, one occasion at a time, one person at a time. And that we don't have as much experience with the kingdom of heaven in the here and now as we should, as we could. And I think the reason that I'm not in heaven, the reason I'm still here, is to tell that story and tell about it and encourage people forward that the kingdom of heaven is really closer than we think.
Amazing work, Stephen. Are you happy this experience happened to you?
Yes. It's clearly sovereign. It's something that the Father did, and I'm a participant in what it is that he's doing in the earth here and now and today. And, you know, there's a part of me that says, gosh, if more, you know, you really get an understanding that the here and now is a mess.
It sure is. Stephen, we're going to talk more about this episode that occurred, and also we'll take phone calls, questions for you, and maybe similar stories next.